It's okay. Someone needs to hear this today. It's okay. Someone out here today, someone here, someone online needs to hear this. It's okay. It's going to be okay. In fact, I think we all need to hear that today. It's going to be okay. That's the message Jesus wants the second church in the book of Revelation to hear. He told them exactly that. He said, you know what? It's going to be okay. Even though everything that you see looks like it's not going to be okay. And maybe for you in your life right now, it feels like you're in the situation of one of those believers in this church in Smyrna, that life isn't going to be okay. It just feels like everything's falling apart. Maybe you're facing a huge struggle that doesn't seem to be resolving in your favor, no matter what you do. Or a major decision that just doesn't seem to have any good answers. Or maybe you face a health crisis that over and over it just seems to be getting worse. No healing. It's not better. Or you're watching the news and the world just really seems to be going from awful to absolute evil. If that's what you're experiencing right now, you may be wondering if your pastor's losing his mind, right? When I tell you, it's going to be okay. I'm going to challenge you today to a faith-stretching moment. I want to challenge you today to step out in a way that maybe you have never done before. I'm going to invite you to believe that it's going to be okay. To believe it, no matter what your circumstances are. Not because I say that, because that is what Jesus is telling his church. He tells the church in Smyrna, if you remain faithful, it'll be okay. So are you ready for that challenge? Are you? If you're online, I'm going to ask you by faith today to go ahead and write in the comments, it'll be okay. So go ahead, write in the comments, it'll be okay. And if you're here in person with us today, I'm just going to ask you to turn to someone beside you and in faith, just tell that person to their face, it's going to be okay. Go ahead and do that. It's going to be okay. So we've been learning that to remain a healthy missional church, we've got to be willing to hear the truth. But in real life, it's not always too easy to believe what we hear, especially when the truth about ourselves seems to be pointing in a different direction than what we hear. So last week we said that if we are going to be fully devoted followers of Jesus and continue this mission of making followers of Jesus, we must be truth hearers, right? We got to be truth hearers. Today, we're adding to that we must also be truth trusters. Can someone say that with me? Truth trusters. We not only need to hear the truth, but we need to trust what we are hearing. A pastor observed a little girl standing outside a preschool Sunday school classroom waiting for her parents, and the pastor noticed that she was clutching this big book, and the title of it was Jonah and the Whale. So feeling a little mischievous, he knelt down beside the girl and he said, "What's that you have in your hand?" "This is a book about Jonah and the whale," she answered. "Tell me something," he continued. "Do you believe that story about Jonah and the whale?" And the girl said, "Why, of course I believe it." And the pastor inquired a little further, "You really believe that a man can be swallowed by a big fish? It'll stay inside him all that time and then come out okay?" And she declared, "Yes, the story is in the Bible, and we talked about it in Sunday school today." And then the pastor asked, "Can you prove to me that this story is true?" And she thought for a moment and then said, "Well, when I get to heaven, I'll ask Jonah." And finally the pastor said, "Well, what if Jonah's not in heaven?" And the girl put her hands on her hips and sternly declared, "Then you can ask him." So when it comes to trusting the truth about ourselves, our best source of truth is Jesus. Because Jesus always, always tells us the truth. And in another apocalyptic message to the churches, the Apostle John, he's on the island of Patmos, he receives this message from Jesus, and Jesus tells the truth about the future, their future. And he addresses it to this second church called Smyrna, and Jesus speaks to John in this vision. He says, "To the angel of the church in Smyrna write, these are the words of him who is the first and the last, who died and came to life again. I know your afflictions." Jesus says, "I know your afflictions." So we're looking at these seven churches in the first two chapters of Revelation to discover what it takes to be a true witness to Jesus. And these messages, they're written to real historic churches in these real situations, but these messages are also prophetic words for the church universal in all times and places. So this comes to us today as a word for you and me, for the church. So as accusations are flying today in this world, as bombs are dropping, the whole church needs to hear and trust and respond to Jesus' direction in this timely message for his followers. So Jesus says, "I know. I know." Some of you here today need to hear, it's going to be okay. Jesus says, "I know. I know what's going on in the world. I know what's going on in your church. I know what's going on in your life. I see it. I know it. And if you remain faithful to me, no matter what you're facing, it will be okay." So let's dig a little deeper into this letter to the church in Smyrna. You know, it's the next church in the list after Ephesus. And it's geographically kind of in order of these seven churches, 25 miles north of the church of Ephesus on the Aegean Sea. Believers there, they're facing some tough times. They've been persecuted, and really by two powerful forces. One are the Jews, who really aren't God followers. These Jews aren't. They're persecuting the Christians, and then there's an anti-Jewish Christian population that supports the emperor worship. So from two sides, they're getting persecuted, and things are very tough. They're highly outnumbered, they're fiercely persecuted, and the Lord comes to address them saying, "I am the first and the last who died and who has come to life." Now this phrase identifying Jesus is really important. I have died and I have come to life, especially in light of what Jesus is about to reveal to the church. He says, "I know your afflictions and your poverty, yet you are rich." So we think in terms of material wealth. You know, this certainly addresses this. This is a poor church, a persecuted church. They are poor because they're not persecuted because they're poor. They're poor because they are persecuted. Because of the things that are coming against them, they can't hold down jobs. They can't get things that they need in the communities. They are shut out from everything that is necessary. And this is all because of their faith. So the challenge for them is to really abandon their faith so that they can move back into this favor with the people around them. That's the challenge. But Jesus says there's a better way. It reminds me of pictures of the Jewish ghettos in Warsaw, Poland, when the Nazis had put them in there. They were stripped of all their material possessions. They were extremely poor. They had no recourse. Jesus says, "I know, even in this condition." And Jesus is telling them, "You are not forgotten. It'll be okay." Here's my question, maybe yours too. How can that be? How can it be okay? You know, James, he writes about the favored position of those who belong to Christ, even though they seem to not be in favor. He said, "Listen, my brothers and sisters, has not God chosen those who are poor in the eyes of the world to be rich in faith and to inherit the kingdom he promised to those who loved him, who love him?" James says, it's going to be okay, even though it doesn't seem like it right now. The end actually is fantastic. Jesus tells the church in Revelation, "I know about the slander of those who say they are Jews and are not, but are a synagogue of Satan." So Jesus is very clear here. He wants the church to know where this opposition is coming from. It's so easy for us in times, you know, of stress and strain and times of persecution and difficulty to start pointing fingers and start to name names and start to pick out the evil ones within our midst. You know, the individuals, the people who are causing all the problem. It's so easy to do that. And yet, Jesus is saying, look, this battle is not with them. It's ultimately with your adversary, Satan, the accuser. In other words, for the devil. In Ephesians, the Apostle Paul, he makes it really clear. He says, our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the powers of this dark world, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavenly realms. Sure, people can be under the influence of this evil, but the source of that evil power is Satan. The battle is against Satan, which is key for us to remember when we're feeling unfairly treated and persecuted. This battle is not against individual people, it's against Satan and his schemes. So when these letters were written, in these very tough times for these churches, they were facing all this strong persecution, which was going to get much worse. And some believers in the church today, as we talked last week, they believe we're heading toward this same kind of future. And so whether you agree or not, we need to understand that we are in this spiritual battle against real adversaries who are ready to accuse every believer who is faithful to Christ. So if you're a believer today, a follower of Jesus, if you desire to walk with Jesus and be faithful to him, you're going to face persecution. It is inevitable. So I don't know about you, but that makes me a little nervous. So listen carefully to what Jesus says next in verse 10. Do not be afraid. Did you hear that? Do not be afraid. Say that with me. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. So how do you read this? Here's how I read it. You are about to suffer, right? That's how I read it. And I start to think, yikes, I don't like that. I really don't like to suffer, to be honest. I mean, I haven't faced the kind of difficulties and struggles that some of you have faced, that many others have faced. I'm really a baby when it comes to suffering. And Cheryl can attest to that, a really baby, literally. I hate pain and suffering. So, when I read that, I hear, you are going to suffer. But it's okay. You don't need to worry. So we don't want to... I think Jesus wants us to be very clear here, or wants to be very clear. We have to come to terms with this truth that I'm about to share. Pain is part of the Christian life. Pain is part of the Christian life. You know, if you signed up for this walk, this journey, thinking, hey, this is going to be good news. I'm not going to have to face any more pain. Jesus is going to save me out of everything. Life is going to be a bubble of cherries. Well, then that just isn't the truth. We've signed up for something that isn't real. See, pain is part of the Christian life. The Christian life involves following Jesus. And Jesus certainly faced pain and suffering. So we are followers of Jesus. If Jesus had to walk through pain and suffering, I think that we can understand that we too are going to face that kind of life. That may seem terrible to us, but Jesus is making it clear the church is not to be afraid of suffering, which is inevitable. So it's never easy to suffer, no matter what the cause. And I'll be the first to confess that it's not easy. Jesus commended the church in Smyrna not for their suffering. So he commends this church. He's not commending them for their suffering. They suffer. He's commending them for their faith in suffering. It's for their faith in suffering. So out of this suffering comes this wonderful opportunity for faith. If you remain faithful, it'll be okay. Again, as I shared with the kids today, this idea of the sparrows, Jesus said to his disciples before he went off to suffer, he's teaching them. He's trying to get this into their understanding. He said, are not two sparrows sold for a penny? In other words, they're really not worth much, right? Nothing. but not one of them will fall to the ground outside of the Father's care. So I used to read that as, you know what, God's going to care for even the sparrow. They're going to be taken care of. But as I'm studying this passage, I got stuck on something. It says, not one of them will fall to the ground without the Father's care. In other words, sparrows are falling to the ground. He didn't keep them from falling to the ground. You know, it's kind of an idea. They're falling out of the tree. They're probably dying, right? He didn't keep them from that. He said, he knows that it's happening. The Father cares about it. And even the very hairs of your head are numbered. That's good, right? So don't be afraid. Luke says, you are more valuable than even the sparrows. God knows your situation. Don't be afraid. So don't be afraid of what? Don't be afraid of the persecution and the suffering that will disqualify you from the Father's care. You are worth more than many sparrows. So some of us sometimes feel like even though that when we're suffering, that somehow God is punishing us. When we're suffering, somehow we've gotten off track. Somehow we're outside of God's care. That is not the case. That is a lie from Satan. If you are facing persecution and suffering, any kind, you need to understand, God cares. You're not abandoned. He is with you. He loves you. God is in this. In fact, is it an opportunity for faith? A pastor who was being ordained this summer in the Covenant Church, she shared her story with me about faith building suffering. I thought it was quite amazing. She said in 2011, she started this part-time ministry as a ministry director for kids. It was kind of her dream job. She had been praying, and God led her into this. It was so amazing.